It's my privilege to serve an historic church on the other side of this country, in the city from which Susan came after school and from which our lovely dancers have come as well. When I preach in my church in San Francisco, I'm aware that I'm in the pulpit of Thomas Starr King, a man after whom two mountains, several elementary schools, and a particular statue were named. The statue was in the U.S. Hall of Statuary in the Congress down in the District of Columbia until the California State Legislature, in a moment of pique at the last minute of a legislative session, decided they would replace our dear Starr King with Ronald Reagan. Starr King has now blessedly come home to live by the state capitol in Sacramento. Until that debacle, we were very proud that King stood there right alongside Father Junipero Serra, who was the founder of the mission chain in California. And I'm very proud to be able to speak from his pulpit, literally his pulpit. When I do so, though, I'm aware that my words aren't his. But there is something about that guy that is inside of me when I stand in that place. I think that's been true of all the ministers who've stood there before me. King was both a Unitarian and a Universalist long before a merger came along, and his speeches up and down the state of California during the Civil War is what kept that state in the Union when a lot of its Southern sympathizers would have rather gone the other way. I know that when your minister stands in this chancel, he also feels the presence of those who have gone before him, like William Ellery Channing, who he mentioned. Channing was one of the mentors of Thomas Starr King and a whole generation of ministers, and it was from this chancel that he finally fessed up to being a Unitarian. In those days, he and his liberal colleagues were perfectly satisfied to just call themselves simple and true Christians. But the other guys around there in Boston had a different idea of the gospel they were preaching. They thought it was heretical. They thought that somehow he wasn't representing Christianity as it should be spoken. But that wasn't King's idea. He felt that God spoke to him as it could speak to all of us. And he believed that the man he followed was a human being. This Jesus of Nazareth, a human being to whom he could aspire to be somehow like, at least in a little way. This human being who spoke a gospel of peace and love and justice. That's heretical, the other said. You're that dirty word, Unitarian. Finally, he had to admit that that's what he was. Although he didn't regard that as a dirty word at all. After all, that term had been around already for a long time in Europe. And in his sermon here in this church, although I'm told the pulpit was rather higher and there in the middle, he looked down at that congregation in not as strong a voice as he might have had, perhaps. And he talked about what this Unitarian Christianity was like. And he decided that he was going to do that here in Baltimore because he believed it was time to spread the good news of that Unitarianism out beyond the confines of New England, in which, up until that time, it had really been cooped up. This congregation has its beginning, as your church history puts it, when in 1817 a group of people gathered in a certain guy's house and decided to form a religious society. And within another year or so, they had put up this building. And after it had been dedicated and a new minister had finally been called, they chose William Ellery Channing to come here and preach that ordination sermon, a sermon that's often thought of as the founding document of the Unitarian side of our movement. It rallied the sentiments of those who formed the American Unitarian Association in 1825, rather belatedly, since the Universalists had already formed state conventions long before that. Earl Morris Wilbur, then the president of the school that went on to be called Stark King, in his History of Unitarianism, said that what Channing was doing was spelling out freedom, tolerance, and reason as the foundation stones of Unitarianism. Channing said that the way Unitarians lived those kinds of virtues, as he called them, was a much better illustration of their faith than any of the words that they might use to describe it. He said that what made a person religious was developing their character well enough so they could exemplify the kind of virtues that we now spell out in our Unitarian Universalist Statement of Principles and Purposes, a statement you give out to any visitor who comes to this church. Channing was being very intentional in giving that sermon here in Baltimore and in giving it at an ordination celebration. He chose Baltimore not only because he was a friend and mentor to Jared Sparks, but because he believed, as had Thomas Jefferson and Joseph Priestley and others who lived here in this region, that Unitarianism had a saving message that this country and its people badly needed. Not just those folks who were members of those old, historic, now liberal churches in New England. Channing wanted the message of our faith preached out across the land, even out in San Francisco, because it was to San Francisco that he encouraged Thomas Stark King to go when King's doctor told him that he needed a change in climate for his health. Channing considered Sparks to be the ideal person to preach our faith here in the newly burgeoning environs of the town of Baltimore. Sparks was an energetic young man who was eager to take the message of our faith out beyond the walls of this church so it could influence those who had never heard it before, but instinctively agreed with its message. And he was very careful to preach to those black folks who were up there in the highest rungs of this church, as well as to those folks sitting where you're sitting right now. That's why it seemed appropriate to Channing to give his defining sermon at an ordination where someone was being charged with the mantle of ministry, a mantle that in our movement comes for life. It is something we cannot renounce. It is something that we're obligated to feel in our depths and to let motivate us to take our faith out into the world that needs it. That's what we're doing for Susan. Here's a woman for whom this call grew stronger and stronger as she moved in her journey through life. That calling doesn't often come like a flash of lightning. It takes time for us to figure it out and what it means. And the calling in the beginning for Susan was to dance, which you've seen this afternoon, a bodily urge that she felt inside herself, a way of communicating her beliefs through the motions of her body. But the dance didn't fulfill all of the call. There was still something even deeper inside. And so step by step, in the gradual and the building way in which a ministerial calling comes, with lots of experimenting and give and take, beginning as a special student and then enrolling in seminary, the deeper calling for Susan began to be clear. A calling like that needs to be tested and fleshed out, because ministry is difficult work. It needs to get so deep inside one that you just can't let it go. And I watched that happen for Susan as she moved through the classes she enrolled at Star King, to figuring out how to do an internship and train for the chaplaincy and deal with all the complications of her life, her family, her home. It's not easy. But as my colleagues here know, it's compelling. And it's significant that a faith that requires so much embodiment, like Channing preached, should appeal to someone who found so satisfying movement in dance, because what more embodied an art form or a way of expressing belief could there ever be? And embodiment is what Channing was talking about when he said that it was our actions and not our words that define our liberal faith. And right actions were something he believed we could figure out on our own, though he believed that Jesus was as good a model as anyone in this world would ever be able to find for embodying faith. And that's why Channing thought of himself as a Christian. But a Christian who believed that since God has given us a rational nature, he'll call us to account for that, rather than requiring us to make some kind of creedal confession as though saying those words could ever express what a faith is really like. In a sermon in this church, after doing a lot of theologizing, you know, it's debated whether it took him an hour and a half or two, not the 20 minutes I've got, Channing finally got down to describing the embodied faith that he saw exemplified in Jesus. He says Jesus' mission was the recovery of men and women to virtue, to living lives not based on professions of belief. And remember, Jesus never uttered the words of a creed, but according to conscience. To love God, said Channing, believing this is what Jesus would have said, was to love goodness, holiness, justice, and virtue. Channing said that he regarded the spirit of love, charity, meekness, forgiveness, liberality, and beneficence as the brightest image we could bear of God and the only true test of our piety. And having said that, he turned to Jared Sparks, or it would have been Susan if she'd been alive back then, and he said, "You are this day to take upon you important duties and to devote yourself to that religion which most hallowed lips have preached and the most precious blood sealed. We trust that you will bring to this work a willing mind, a firm purpose, a martyr spirit, a readiness to toil and suffer for the truth, a devotion to your best powers in the interests of pieties and virtue. My sister," he would have said to you, Susan, "may your life preach more loudly than your lips." May it be so. If anything were to define our liberal Unitarian Universalist faith, it's this. And not just for ministers, all of us. The Unitarianism, now the Unitarian Universalism, that Channing felt called to define and defend in that sermon at Jared Sparks' ordination in this church, was a faith that had evolved in his mind as he made use of both his reason to study scripture and tradition, but to look at human life itself so that he could discern what truly was good and just, what was helpful and full of meaning, and that wasn't just for himself, but for everyone else. That's why he believed in preaching. And in doing this at an ordination, he was passing on the mantle of living out this faith to those who would follow him, like Jared Sparks, and to you, Susan. Ours is an historic faith. Don't let anyone ever deceive you about that. It has roots as deep as any other religious movement in the Protestant tradition out of which we've come. Both the Unitarian and the Universalist parts of our movement go back to the early years in the development of Christianity itself, and their roots were planted in this country in colonial times. There were churches in Eastern Europe that called themselves Unitarian long before there were any churches that called themselves Presbyterians or Disciples or Methodists. But as Channing put it, there was and there remains something unique about our approach to religion that distinguishes us from our siblings, although some of those siblings may be a lot closer to us than we sometimes think. It's our desire to adhere to an embodied faith whose essence lies in living virtuous lives rather than affirming the words of creeds or perpetuating dogmas or participating in rituals that have lost their meaning that makes ours the kind of church it is, a free church based on an open faith, a tolerant member of a broader religious community in which a chaplain, a social worker, a pulpit preacher, a mother or a father or a friend, anyone, is called to make use of their energy, their skill, and their compassion to serve others and life itself in the spirit of Jesus and all the other great prophets who believed, as did Jesus, that we should love the holy our God, that is life itself, with all our hearts and minds and souls, that is the whole of ourselves, and we should love our neighbors as ourselves, recognizing, as we put it in our UU statement of principles and purposes, that all people share an inherent dignity and worth and are a part of the very same web of existence. It's with that belief that Susan enters the ministry. We should be proud to be in this historic church at this moment as we affirm the ministry of Susan Dunham, the ministry to which Jared Sparks was also summoned in that famous sermon by William Henry Channing. This ordination has its own little bit of history attached to it, where you will all remember it. For if there weren't people like Susan, whose ministry will do us proud and cause us to remember it, then what are we? Well, what we are is a faith of compassion and love deeply and badly needed in this world, a world where hurting people need its balm, no matter what their faiths. And it's up to us to take that balm to them. Remember that, my friend. Remember it.